What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who has covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here. TK Show, recording from the home studio. I haven't said that one for a while, but it is true. Really glad to have on as my guest, has been on my show several times. Used to write for me. Those were the good old days, John Middlecoff. You were writing, you're filing weekly. We're talking over story ideas. I'm sure that was the highlight of your career. That's a moment you can never get back. John Middlecoff, NFL analyst, host of the Three and Out podcast, shows up on with Cowherd a lot. John, how are you doing today? Thanks for coming on.
I hope when you see people and they go, who have you had on lately? You're like, Shanahan, Lacob, Middlecoff.
Right in, you're right in it. Not even that order. Not in a Curry, Middlecoff, Middlecoff again.
Sala.
Oh, Bosa was in there.
I'm doing good. It's crazy. You know, it's not that long ago. You're in the probably middle of July. You're like, is football ever going to start? Then all of a sudden you blink and you're in week three and you're like, God, we're all already a quarter way through the season. It sure flies by. You got injuries going all over the place. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the Niners aren't alone with the backup quarterback situation. That's for sure.
Yeah, let's get into that. It does hit me like it just started and then we're writing teams off. And I understand why. You go 0-3, you're probably not making the playoffs, including a team that you know very well. We'll get to that. But it's like it comes fast. If you don't win a couple games, man, reality hits an NFL team really fast. But let's talk 49ers, of course. I miss your 49ers takes all the time, John. I know you do them occasionally on your show, but I miss hearing it all the time. Your former co-host I hear all the time, which is fantastic. But I miss your takes. I want to hear them. We all know what happened with Mac Jones and the 49ers during the draft, where Kyle was very, very, very – almost took him number three overall, and in the end didn't, perhaps because he was persuaded out of it, and then he took Trey Lance, and we know what happened there. What do you make of the Mac Jones re-arrival with the 49ers? I've been kind of telling people, this is not Kirk Cousins. This is not the guy Kyle's dreamed of having. He liked him a lot, but in the end didn't take him. What do you make of the Mac Jones coming back, what the relationship is with Brock Purdy now that we've seen him play for a game? What do you make? Was it a good evaluation overall? Is this a good fit? Certainly not over Purdy, but does it explain some more things about this whole Mac Jones, Kyle Shanahan relationship?
Well, people forget Kirk Cousins was the fourth round pick. You know, it's like he liked him a lot. And even there have been stories that came out that he would have been cool with taking him in the second round if they had gone somewhere different from RG3, but they were never contemplating taking him really, really high. Right now, Kyle wasn't the boss then, as he mentioned. You know, I get my fix listening to you and Barrows when I just need the nitty gritty 49er stuff.
We did do
the podcast. Throw the podcast on and be breaking down, you know, punts and kicks. But hey, listen, his skill set, I said it at the time. We went through a stretch where clearly quarterbacks got really, really overdrafted. You know, are these guys going to live up to the hype of last year? I don't know. But there's no disputing like Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, even Drake May, their physical characteristics are pretty special. So to me, there is no such thing as I've said this forever, as a high floor prospect, right? Marvin Harrison, high floor prospect. He has 7 catches. He looks kind of like a disaster so far because they don't exist. You know, just like high ceiling guys, they also can be Trey Lance, not work out. But I never have a problem taking a swing for a high quote-unquote ceiling guy because the draft is a crapshoot just to begin with. You're dealing with humans. These aren't widgets. But Mac Jones, kind of like Kenny Pickett, I mean, I would say historically, those guys were much closer to Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, you could say Kirk Cousins probably should have gone higher. Let's use Jimmy Garoppolo, Derek Carr. Guys drafted somewhere between 35 and 55, where it's like that's not that crazy of a pick. But taking a quarterback in the top 15 – definitely number three overall in the trade. Let's face it, what they did was reckless. when they traded from 12 to 3. It was very emotional. You know, you've been in a lot of companies over the course of the last 10 years, from the newspaper to the Athletic, now to the Standard, your podcast. You know, if you're going to make a business decision, you sometimes you need to take a deep breath. And you've been around coaches your whole career. They say, hey, listen, sometimes I just, before I do something rash, sleep on it, take a breath. It's human nature. And that, they ended that season with all the injuries. They got kicked out of Santa Clara. Emotions were high, and they traded from 12 to 3. A little haphazard. Like, that's pretty insane. Like, you don't see that very often.
Without having a guy in mind, right?
Without having a guy in mind, you don't control the draft when you're going to 3. So even if you had a guy in mind, which they didn't, it's still pretty crazy because you don't know at the time they made the trade exactly what's going to happen at 2. I guess you knew what one with Trevor Lawrence. And they missed. But, you know, this notion that Mac Jones, and you, I heard you and Barrels talking about it, his skill set is much more like a fourth rounder than it is a second rounder, let alone number 3 overall. But he's a good backup quarterback. And what did he mention? That Trent Williams told him to kind of calm down, just relax a little bit. He's okay. And they, Pearsall looks like he's a good player. Juwan Jennings is a good player. You got McCaffrey who's healthy. Like, they got enough weapons. You just distribute the ball a little bit, i.e. like Daniel Jones with the Colts. But thank God they didn't. Listen, it all worked out because they got Purdy, which I would say this about Brock. It is a little concerning that, you know, he had a major injury. It just happened to be the NFC Championship game. So instead of missing the entire season, he just misses 6 or 8 months in the offseason. And this injury is not nothing if you're missing games week 2. Obviously, Brock is no dummy. Like, he doesn't want to miss games. So it must be bad enough where he cannot play. We'll see what happens, you know, week 3, which I think we both probably agree he's not going to play. But part of being a really good player, and he showed in week 1, like, I thought he had a really good game, except one of the 2 picks I thought was pretty bad. They need him on the field. They got a little lucky this year. Their schedule is a little bit easier. But, like, what if they were the Rams and playing the Eagles this week? Like, it's really important to have him on the field. Turf toe, I don't know anything about it before Deion Sanders, who lost a toe, but it feels like a bunch of guys have it right now. Maybe that's an indictment. And you've been on the crappy turf all over the league, which can't help. But, I mean, listen, they've got the backup quarterback, it looks like, correct, 2 of the last 3 years, which is important. But, like, I don't know who the Bills' backup quarterback is, right? If, like, you shouldn't, like, that should, they need Brock if they want to. I thought they'd be a playoff team, but, God, they just need him on the field.
Yeah, I mean, would you push it for this? It is a division game. You beat the Cardinals, you're going to have a very strong hand in the NFC West. You still got the Rams coming up week 5. Everybody's winning in this division because they're all playing
7-1.
Yeah, NFC South and AFC South is what we all said. There are not a lot of tough games on. The Rams have a tough one coming up because they have the first place schedule. No one else has the first place schedule in the division. Would you push it with Purdy if it's like, yeah, you know what? He's probably okay. Let's play. Let's win this game. Or do you go, you know, we got Mac Jones. We probably can win this game without Purdy. Let's be safe.
You're more dialed in on the Niners turf, but listen to you and Barrows say that, like, their turf is considered the best in the league. It wasn't that long ago when it was the number one story that everyone was tearing ACLs and it was ripping up. It's crazy how far they've come. With being 2-0, you have a little breathing room, but listen, these games, you know, the difference of being 9-8 and potentially 11-7 could come down to really 3 or 4 plays throughout the season, right? I do think the Cardinals, we're recording this Thursday morning, have a lot of question marks in their secondary right now. Mm-hmm. So from a passing game standpoint, Mac Jones, like, the Saints aren't good in their secondary either. And he looked pretty good as the game went on. And if McCaffrey's healthy, maybe you just go, we can score on him. The defense clearly playing pretty well through the first couple games. It helps to have a good defensive coordinator and one you're comfortable with. But I would not, because I like I said, it is just, he is injured now. That's just a reality. You need this guy. If you are going to make the playoffs, you need him to get back as soon as possible and then not go away, because you got to play the Rams twice. Even some of the games like Tampa, like, they do have some games that aren't just going to be shoo-ins. And let's face it, it's the NFL. Last week wasn't easy, you know, and I get, you know, the backup quarterback. But, like, one takeaway was, and I'm guilty of this, oh, the Saints suck. And then I left that game thinking, like, kind of like the Saints wide receivers. Tight end 83 is a pretty good player. Mm-hmm. I would love to have Kamara on my team. Spencer Rattler's not terrible. Like, and that's how I think that sometimes the NFL, you can have – the Niners are a good example of this. They went 6-11 last year. But how many of those losses were fourth quarter late losses that the team that they were playing goes, that wasn't an easy game. like that game against the Lions, all the three division games that they blew. So it's, you're going to play some 6-11 teams that are not going to be easy games. This is not college football where if you're a, you know, a 10-2 team, you're blowing out half your opponents. That's not the way it works, especially with, you know, the way they're currently built, you know, cutting some corners financially, getting rid of
maybe,
some guys.
Maybe.
Because I'm not afraid to get in the weeds either, because I agree with a lot of your takes over the offseason about totally understand, you know, Greenlaw, who is still injured right now. We'll see. He might miss another game. Like, I get that's part of the NFL. Hufanga, he awesome story, awesome guy, like type guy you want. But once you get two major injuries, I get it, these finances. But like, you know, Brian Robinson to Jordan Mason, like, I'm sorry, there's a distinct gap between the two players, right? Leonard Floyd, just save $10 million for, imagine him with Bryce Huff and with Bosa. How much did you have to save that much money? Like, this is, whenever I read some of these stories about these owners, like Jeffrey Lurie is the most aggressive right now, consistently. The Niners were hand in hand, but he hasn't stopped. Now it's easier when you won. But this is all monopoly money. The days of like where Al didn't have the money to pay Jamarcus Russell, those days are so long gone. The amount of money that is coming from just the media deal alone, let alone what you make, Jed could buy three more private jets. It's not, you're never worried about like the mindset of like this could all end. Well, nowhere in the foreseeable future is it ending. So yeah, giving an extra guy $10 million, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and you mentioned the Eagles. That's what I said. You are competing with that team. That is a team you are trying to beat, and they're doing it every year where they're figuring out how to add players. And they're subtracting some, but that's personnel decisions, as the 49ers have done. But you're trying to beat this team. You're trying to beat.
I would say the Rams, too. The Rams are going to start spending money again.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And it's just this decision, well, now we can stop doing it. That's the part I thought at least had to be identified. Around the league, John, you talked to a ton of people. What was the sense of what the 49ers were doing?
Well, again, I think emotionally, you know, let's face it, Kyle, you know, I think you got to break his crew into two sorts. Like Kevin O'Connell and Sean McVay are kind of more optimistic, happier guys. Mm-hmm. I actually think LaFleur has a lot in common with Kyle. They can be a little angrier, which I kind of relate to, too. Mm-hmm. But I think after you have bad seasons, or they can go in this like tailspin. And, you know, there's this balance of being positive and negative. And I think Kyle kind of leans negative first. Mm-hmm. And so I think everyone is like, we're moving on from all these guys after the devastating season. And instead of just kind of like, hey, everything's going to be okay. Again, some of these moves, like Dre Greenlaw, it's emotional for fans and stuff. It's the right football move in Hufanga. I think some of these moves, which he doesn't control, you know, Jed and obviously Parag, who's really, they're, Parag's really good at his job dealing with all this stuff. They were doing the same stuff the Eagles were doing with manipulating the salary cap. It's like, why did you have to draw this insane concrete line of like just getting rid of Leonard Floyd? Why? Just because you didn't want to give him $10 million? Like, why wouldn't you also want him on the team just to have more depth with your defensive line, unless you're just cool with like, you guys might win 6 or 7 games then, because that might happen, because you've been saying this forever. To be good when you do a reset, you need a lot of luck on your side with hitting on draft picks, which whether you're Ron Wolf or, you know, Bill Walsh in his prime or the worst GM, you just don't know. It's always a coin flip. And it looks pretty promising right now, but, you know, it's the season's long. Guys get injured. I just think that it was a pretty risky proposition with some of the moves that I didn't think they had to make. Like Jordan, you could just brought Jordan Mason back for a couple $1 million. Who cares? Like, what are we? We're not talking Micah Parsons, $188 million.
With your running back who got hurt for most of last year.
And that to me is part of it. Like I get you like Brian Robinson. And here's the thing. And I think one way I've had Kyle describe to me, because he has a very heavy hand in the roster, right? Okay. I mean, no one comes on the roster without his say-so. It's literally in the contract. He looks at the roster like a depth chart. Because like this offseason, well, who's going to be my starting this guy week one? Where GMs kind of think about it big picture. Mm-hmm. So it's easier for them to go, quote unquote, best player available, because they're not necessarily thinking about the mid-September game. They're thinking about over the next 3 or 4 years, right? Where a coach thinks about, I need a defensive tackle, Collins from Texas, right now. Mm-hmm. Even it's like, well, is this the best pick? I don't know, maybe. Because I think he was a pretty polarizing player, their second round pick, for example. No one I talked to had any issue with the first round pick. Blue chip guy from Georgia, versatile player. we can argue about his ceiling, like who he is as a player, but like that's the type guy you take in the top 15 at defensive line. You start getting to the second round, you get people all over the map, which is the nature of the draft as you go, you know, round by round. But like that to me feels much more like a coaching pick, which it's like they don't get as much shit because they've won a lot. But they're, you know, Gruden was like a coaching run organization when he was over the Raiders. The 49ers are kind of the same thing. Like their coaches have more juice than a lot of these like the Eagles, their general manager runs the roster. And look, they benefited from it.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, that goes into them why they don't take tackles. It isn't because it is a lot because it's hard to fit tackles in the system. Let me say that again. There's a physical profile. There's a mental profile that's hard for them to fit. But also, Kyle keeps saying there wasn't one who would start this year. We couldn't take one who would start. Well, that's part of it. Is you want him to start in 2 years, right? And start him in 3 years, right? If Trent Williams gets hurt, I don't know who's playing left tackle. Spencer Burford's banged up.
Trent Williams is hurt. I mean, he was gipping around that whole game.
Yeah, yes. And at some point, he's going to miss a game. It's the track record of an older player who's incredibly talented. And I especially would circle our official turf games. But like, it isn't just when you say that makes me just click in. Like, you're going to take guys for depth. You do have to take guys at specific positions for depth that aren't going to start in week one, that you know aren't going to start for week one, but also are going to be working into your depth. It allows you to either, you know, protect yourself on the injury front. Also, things work out great, you can trade the guy. And it does not seem to work out that often for the 49ers. They don't do it that way. And I think at some point it's really going to hurt him at tackle, but it hasn't so far. And that's what Kyle keeps mentioning.
Well, I respect Kyle. And I admire him for being an offensive guy who values the defensive line as high as humanly possible. That's what any good offensive coach, you know, Harbaugh, Andy Reid, they value the line of scrimmage on defense. But it feels like they also really value the offensive line, you know. And, like, you're going to miss on some offensive linemen in the draft, but you just never stop drafting them. And that's one thing when I was with the Eagles, you know, that was a huge Andy Reid thing. And I remember last year they were like starting the second rounder from BYU and they ended up benching him. But then again, they take a tackle this year. They're just always – doesn't mean you can't take skill guys. I've always looked at it like when you have an Andy Reid, a Kyle, a Sean Payton, whoever, you can find random skill guys throughout the fourth, fifth, sixth round and turn them into Juwan Jennings, turn them into Jordan Mason as an undrafted free agent. Like that is their skill. There are only so many human – like Trent Williams is an all-time outlier. He's like one of the great tackles of all time. And you kind of got him because he cooked the books to make sure he ended up with you. He wouldn't go to the Minnesota Vikings who had a better offer. Pretty – not lucky because you deserved creating that relationship and you earned that respect from him. But like that situation is not coming around again.
It is not.
So it's like you do – like – and Ricky Pearsall looks like an excellent player. Like he's got a chance to be if he can stay on the field healthy. Like he's – pretty talented, but they've told us. I mean, their offensive line coach said this. It feels like it doesn't even feel like he's just saying this because this is what you're supposed to say in this corporation. It's like he believes it too. Like we value the guys that touch the ball more than the offensive lineman, which I don't think you would hear if you just went around to the playoff teams and the good teams that the Niners have competed against for. I don't think you would hear that mindset many other places.
Yeah, I was just laughing because when you said Kyle's depth chart, I go, Kyle showed me his depth chart.
I know, he hit it shut when you were in there. I was listening.
He's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm not filming this thing. That's what the Corey Rice, the PR guys, did. But it's like, I couldn't really read it, though. It was like scrawled. A lot of things were scrawled up there, but he literally showed me the depth chart. I think it was like a projected spring depth chart because that's what he wanted to show me. Like, there were different names on it. But I couldn't really read. I felt terrible. Like I saw this incredibly secret thing that I couldn't relate to everyone else because I couldn't read it. But yes, he does work up a depth.
For example, I'll defend giving McKivitz an extension, which I know he's a pretty polarizing player. Offensive linemen are not coming into the league like they used to, right? The depth of offensive linemen has never been worse. Yet the depth and the talent on the defensive line feels like it's coming in fast and furious. So the supply and the demand of the two, way more elite defensive linemen, especially interior pass rushers, are all over the league. So it's hard to find random tackles. So giving McKivitz, like, let's say he's considered by most people, separate from the 49, an average starter. Yep. It's really hard to find an average starter at tackle. So you go, like, it's going to be hard to replace this guy. We already know he knows our scheme. We like the guy. Like, that's, it's more based on what, how you can replace him. Like, McGlinchey is a good example. People thought, like, yeah, $50 million. Well, he's literally started every single year since he's been in the NFL and basically only on good teams. So it's just hard. Like, there aren't as many just Lane Johnsons and Trent Williams walking around anymore. They're not coming into the draft. It's pretty rare. And the Niners are showing you we're not even going to draft them anyway if they're there. So we might as well just give a guy that we know can be a starter on a team a couple years ago, was in the Super Bowl. We'll do it.
I mentioned Robert Saleh. You know, when they brought him back, obviously it was a big deal. It just calmed the defense, which had been roiling for a couple years, clearly, with Steve Wilkes, and then even worse with Nick Sorensen last year. And even during the summer, 49ers executive were like, you think Saleh is going to go in a year? And I go, if you're good, why, you know, I think so. And I've heard he does want to be a head coach somewhere. Yet he's been fired. What didn't exactly go great in the Jets. If the 49ers defense is what we think it is, and let's say top five defense, you know, which it has been under Saleh, let's say at least top eight. Is he at the top of your list of defensive of head coaching candidates? Because the candidates are kind of not all there. No. You don't see the Ben Johnsons and all that. They've gotten those jobs. Liam Cohen, even, you know, is a super hot candidate out of nowhere. Who are the top candidates, and is Saleh way up there?
Yeah, I mean, Harbaugh's guy mentor feels like Mike McDonald, and very similar profile. So I would say he would be higher just on the simple fact that we've never seen him fail. Yeah. But defensive guys in general tend to get discriminated against a little bit, right? You're always going to lean offense. Hey, does McVay have anybody? Hey, does LaFleur have anybody? Does Kevin O'Connell have anybody? You know, the Eagles offense is not easy to watch, so maybe we'll
go there. That guy's not getting it.
You know, I think the offensive guys, which I do understand, because part of it is the quarterback. Like, Brian Flores is an excellent defensive coordinator, right? I mean, his team actually wasn't that bad when he was in Miami, but he was literally known for being a complete a-hole to Tua and not being able to get along with offensive coaches. So if I'm an owner, I go, well, we're going to ideally pay the quarterback one day, by that time, $70 million. Like, that's going to be our most important asset. You got to be able to get along with them. And I think sometimes defensive coaches, it's just, that's not what they're used to dealing with, Fred Warner and Nick, but the mentality is completely, it's much more of a kind of a rah-rah position. And that quarterback is much more cerebral, right? It's much more, it's really more academic in the sense of, like, there's not as much screaming and yelling. It's just not the nature beside the offensive line. But I would imagine we're 2 years away from him. You know, I'd be shocked if he gets fired 1 year, then gets rehired. But like you said, it's like a draft. Some guys go higher on given years because the supply and demand of that, you know, season. I do think he's got a pretty good thing going. He doesn't have the pressure. He's being paid a ton of money. He's got, 15 kids. So it's like, does he want to keep moving around?
We haven't checked. It might be 16 now.
I mean, he's got star players that just revere him. I would imagine, you know better than me at this point, is the head coach a little easier on him now? It's an easier landing spot for him, coming with the respect back. My best case, I'd be stunned if he was one and done, because that would show you that, like, Robert Saleh's already interviewing immediately for jobs. Like, who are the other candidates? I do think we might see, for the first time in a little while, Harbaugh was kind of an outlier because he was an NFL guy. Could we see some college guys, you know, kind of like being like, this NIL thing, there's no rules, like, you know, Lane Kiffin take the Dolphins job or Kirby Smart. So could some of those guys fill spots that maybe they wouldn't have in years past because they're a little more interested? But I'm with you. I don't see, like, the Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, Kyle Shanahan group of young coordinators, because all the top coordinators are also the head coaches now.
Yeah. Mike McDaniel might be available, John, but I don't think people are hiring him. Let's talk a little Chiefs.
Do you think Kyle and Saleh's relationship is different?
Also, Saleh was a first-time coordinator last time around. And, you know, he kind of had to prove who he was, and Kyle was going to challenge him. And I think they both were young guys. You know, Kyle had never been a head coach before, so they were kind of headbutting on that stuff, which is good, which I think is not a bad thing. It's a good energy. But as John Lynch has told me, he had to calm them down a little bit. Like, it got heated between those two guys. As Kyle's even said, he fired Sala several times, fired him several times. And
Sala looks stronger now. Like, I wouldn't like Kyle's chances in that one.
Yeah, I don't know. Sala runs those steps. I don't see Kyle running the steps in the stadium. Yeah. So he might have more stamina. But I do think it's much more like you've seen it. This is Kyle in his mind. You've sat in my chair. You've dealt with a whole lot of crap. Now you know the things that I have to be worrying about when I have a coordinator doing some things I'm not sure about. And I think that, just that overall. And I'll, you know what? I'll just get through. I haven't really said this one, but I also think the experience of Brandon Staley added to the experience of going through Nick Sorensen and Steve Wilkes changes. Like, Kyle's had experience with people he did not work well with, who did not get the system right, who did not quite fit into the 49ers culture. And I'll put Brandon Staley in that last part. Did not fit the 49ers culture. Did not work in that scheme of things. And I think Kyle brought him in kind of like, yeah, you know what? He's a good mind and he can back end, you know, Nick Sorensen if he needs him. And it just didn't happen. Did not happen. And I just think having a, you know, big brain, Staley is a really sharp dude, but who was not part of the system, really can solidifies in Kyle's mind. Let's bring back a guy that I know, that I know can fit into what we do, our culture, our players. And in a way, I think it even, you know, it tightened his bond to Robert Sala, knowing that, well, I go outside of this system, I might really not think it's good. And the Brandon Staley thing did not work.
You mean a guy that's look at me and like talks to the media on the side all the time when I could have told Kyle that from the beginning. Like, what are we doing? Yeah, your players,
not a Kyle.
The Fred Warner types, or they're not going to be into this guy. This is not going to fly. Cause remember at first he was dealing with Lenore, and by the end, like, were they even that close?
No. I mean, he was just doing DBs, but then it was like nickel DBs. And then it was really, really narrow. I just have heard since, and again, you and I are not shocked by this. Totally nonsense. That's not their scheme anyway, right? He's a 3-4 different kind of a thinker. But I get the idea. You wanted new things. You wanted to, you know, make sure that Sorensen had some guy he could rely on. But it did not feel like that while he was there. And you usually could tell when the players are not mentioning Staley at all. Kyle is kind of jumping any question about Staley. It just was not the kind of the depth that they thought they were getting. And I just think, what if he hires another coordinator who isn't part of the system and ends up like Staley or something different that's just as bad? There was no way. And I just think that Saul is part of the club. Saul is part of the group.
Well, I think he's one thing with like Shanahan's crew that he started in Washington, like, they're all kind of a little different personalities, but they're all comfortable in their own skin, especially at this point in time. And I think Saul is really, you know, Staley feels like this politician. Yep. He's the, you know, Kyle's not exactly texting Schefter and these guys constantly. It's not his style. Yep. So, and some of these guys, like Sean Payton's on the phone with these guys all the time. So it's like every person's a little bit different, but Kyle's not into that at all.
Nope.
And, you know, Fangio is a guy who, if the scheme wasn't right, but he's very authentic. He's different, but he's very authentic. I thought the Brandon Staley thing, I just thought he was so fake the entire time. Yeah. And I also thought he was pretty overrated as a defensive coach, right? Like, he gets a lot of credit for working under Vic. Well, Vic's defenses have been good my entire adult life. Two, the 2020 Rams situation, they had one of the greatest players in the history of the league in his prime in Aaron Donald. They get Jalen Ramsey, and it was kind of a weird year. So it wasn't like based on like a 5-year sample size. Like, we have a lot of Robert Saleh's resume. He's a really good defensive coach. I'm watching Brandon Staley with the Saints. Is anyone like, what's going on here? this is going to be one of the worst. They don't have the players, but like, I think he's a very overrated defensive mind. And I think he got vaulted to like talked about, you know, Flores, the Fangios, the Saleh. These guys have been doing it for a long time. Like, anyone can have one good year offensive or defensive coordinator. How do you do it over a period where players change, where schematically they kind of hone into your strengths and weaknesses? Can you adapt? Like, Fangio is like, well, he runs a pretty, you know, vanilla go-to. Clearly he knows what he's doing and tweaks it over the years. And when he has to, he can get more aggressive with blitzes. Like, he's pretty good for a reason.
Yeah, I would watch out for those one-year guys, and then they're the greatest coordinator of all time. Now, Liam Cohen kind of was a little bit like that, but I'll leave that one open. Who knows? Maybe he's really, really great. But
he's already yelling at his quarterback.
Yeah, that part was not the greatest. And I'll just say, going from Staley to Jim Harbaugh is just like the automatic adrenaline shot of all time. This is what you get when you get a team's attention, get a locker room's attention. You bring Jim Harbaugh in after Brandon Staley. And I think you and I would 100% agree with that. Jim Harbaugh doesn't do any of that crap. Like you talk about not texting Adam Schefter. You talk about not trying to curry anyone's favor, sometimes to his detriment. Like this whole Michigan thing, you had all the national reporters burying him. I get it. But if it was somebody who had been texting him all the time, they would be defending him. They would be. But Jim doesn't care about that. And I think players really appreciate that when it comes down to it.
I don't know if you saw this clip, like Joel Klatt was talking about it, and he thought that the Jim Harbaugh that he first started covering / calling his games for, like from 2015 through basically the 1920 era, and to the guy that became from like 21 over the last 3 or 4 years is kind of a different guy, and was just much more, I would say, positive when it came to dealing with his players, and more like coach with love, because the gym that definitely we were around, pretty intense, mm-hmm. pretty cutthroat, I think early on in Michigan. But the guy now, and you watch him talk now, he's always been publicly good at bringing his players, you know, positive reinforcement stuff. I do feel like we get a different version of Jim, who is always good as a coach. I mean, damn good. Whatever he's doing right now, it feels like a little like Pete Carroll once he got to Seattle, like kind of mastered exactly what he's doing with all of his previous experiences, because they look damn good. And yeah, that quarterback is really, really good. And the news coming out that Khalil's not out for the year and just maybe miss a month, they're going to be a major problem, because that style translates a lot like Kyle's style a couple years ago, like that you go on the road and win. It's like, we got no problem winning ugly in a physical game. Like that always works in the playoffs. Like I hate watching the Eagles right now, but like, translates when you can play a physical style of football.
When it's basically first down is 9 yards, it's not 10
exactly.
yards.
Exactly.
Or it's 8 yards.
It's actually eight.
Yeah, eight, because you're going to go for it on 3rd and 2, and you go for it on 4th and 1. I've said this before, and I'll just like, there are a lot of similarities between Kyle Shanahan and Jim Harbaugh. I mean, I've covered them both very closely. I know them both. They are, Kyle's got more, you know, he can deal with people, you know, broad sorts of people, more than Jim can. He has other interests, maybe more than Jim has, but at their hearts, they're kick-ass offensive, run the ball, offensive minded guys who respect the hell out of the defense. And I think that's like the number one thing out there. You got to get an offensive coordinator who wants to be physical, who just doesn't want to throw the ball 50 times, and respects the hell out of defense. Andy Reid, although maybe not the running the ball part for Andy, but he respects the hell out of the defense.
Wants a pass.
Yeah, he respects the hell out of the defense, will invest things in the defense. And that's where Shanahan and Harbaugh, who've always gotten along. I mean, again, sometimes I think they're sending messages through me, which is fine. Shanahan's never taken a shot at Jim, and obviously a lot of coaches in between did the 49ers, because you got points with the 49er administration if you did that. But Kyle never did that. And I just think there is an affinity. Maybe it's, you know, John Lynch, Stanford, there's some ties there too. But I just think that there is a cycle. There's a circular aspect to the way the 49ers were under Harbaugh and the way they are under Shanahan. Although, by the way, Shanahan's going in, this is year 9. That's double the amount of time that Harbaugh's been around. I mean, this Shanahan thing's gone a long time. Do you think that he has anything to prove? Is this thing going 10, 11, 12, 13 years, or is there something up in the air with Kyle Shanahan?
No, I mean, whenever I see this, I mean, in what the only way he's not coaching in the foreseeable future is he'd have to quit. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see, or some, I don't know, some unforeseen off the field something happening, but look at these guys that get hired. I mean, Ben Johnson was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Who knows if he can handle being a head coach? The other thing, say this all the time when you're a coordinator, when someone on defense shatters his leg, or anyone on the team gets a DUI, or a coach has, you know, a brother that has a heart attack and has to leave, like, you don't have to deal with any of that. you know, if you watch these head coaches, what comes on their desk every single day, it's not really transferable to the coordinators who just kind of live in their own little world that worry about the scheme. That is not being a head coach. And more of these guys that open up and talk about this, they're completely different jobs. So I just think that Kyle, I know last year was rough, but he's been his Andy Reid and Harbaugh type characteristic is he can coach a lot of different quarterbacks. Like, I've always defended Belichick, but like it might have just been Brady, right? Or you're, obviously it was a huge part, but it's like he can't coach any other quarterback, right? And when you can coach different quarterbacks and make guys from Jimmy to Purdy to Matt Schaub, you know, Andy's had a million quarterbacks. Harbaugh's won with a million quarterbacks. That is a very positive attribute in 2025 with the power of this position. So I think that Kyle, listen, there's some things that, I mean, the special teams thing when you ask him and he got pissed off, like, Kyle, this no one just, I don't know. How are you even arguing at this point? But like, we can nitpick the offensive line or whatever, but for the most part under his tenure, they've had a ton of success with random offensive linemen. So it's kind of worked. And a huge reason for that is his guy who also agrees with Kyle Forrester, like is like, they're very, the cohesion of the coaching staff and the vision starts with Kyle. And I think it just works now. And the other thing is like his scheme, he has a base of something, but clearly they have adapted over the years and they've explosive offensively and Pierce all they're slinging the thing down the field. So it's not like he's just a dink and dunk running offense. Now McCaffrey is a huge part when he's on the field, but like you watching Pierce all, it feels like they are pushing the ball down the field in Juwan Jennings. Like they, if you told me those two guys are healthy this week, I would expect them to like sling. And that's with their backup quarterback. I mean, how you could argue that Mac Jones, what he get 2 years, $8 million. If he were to win this game, so you win two games with Mac Jones, earned his entire contract in 7 days. Yep. You could argue he already earned most of it in one game. If you wanted to be like, well, it's the Saints. Like, okay. But if you win two games with your backup quarterback in 2 years, that is because ideally you're not going anywhere without your starter. So if your backup has to start a couple games and you win them both, your coach gets a lot of credit because this goes back to Jim. No quarterback comes on a roster when the head coach is the offensive coordinator, he's basically picking those guys, right? That's not a personnel, might give them the names of the free agents, but they're not pushing a guy that Kyle Shanahan's not comfortable with.
Yeah. And also, let's just say they win this Sunday with Mac Jones. The whole rest of the time he's on the team, you feel good about him as the backup quarterback.
For sure.
You're like, you know what?
If we and the team go, does. Like, there's exactly, this belief in the locker room.
Yep, that's worth. Like, Darnold did not play very much, but he was worth it every dollar, obviously, of what they had with him because they knew he was able to step in for that. And just that ability to feel good about the backup quarterback, which most teams do not feel, you know, or should not feel, which the 49ers did not feel or should not have felt last year with Brandon Allen. It just – that changes
a who gets dynamic. More credit for Sam Darnold's success, Brock Purdy or Kyle Shanahan?
Brock, what?
Sam gives a lot of credit to Brock.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to watch that, you know, number three overall pick sitting behind a guy who was clearly not the number three overall pick and looking up like, okay, what's he doing here? I got to watch this guy. And, you know, Sam's big dude. He's a confident dude, incredible golfer.
Big arm.
We got all the props, SC, and he's watching Jimmy. I mean, I'm not watching Jimmy. He's watching Brock. I don't know why I said Jimmy there. I'll just say because Brock will say that he watched Jimmy, by the way. Like, Brock learned some things from Jimmy in that 1 year of how he handled the scout team, of how he handled being the backup, how much he studied. So I think quarterbacks learn from each other. They pick up traits. They pick up what they like. They pick up what the coach likes about the guys ahead of them. And I think Darnold did that. So I thought you were going to say who gets enough more credit for Darnold, Shanahan or O'Connell. I was a good for Purdy in there. That's a good one.
I would say this, that you know, Jimmy might have drove Kyle Shanahan nuts. The team clearly liked him. Yeah, Jimmy's well liked with players.
Yeah, he's really popular with the Rams.
Like, McVay loves him. Well, he's not. He must text him back.
Yeah, man, well, we'll see. Well, Jimmy's in it's in L.A., so that's where Jimmy likes to be, so maybe that was easier. With the 49ers, he would always, in the offseason, he'd go off to L.A., and they'd never see him again. And they, well, can you show up here a little bit? All right, John, taking plenty of time, I will finish this with a version of a question I'm sure I've asked you before, and I ask all my guests on the TK show. What's your favorite TV show right now?
Well, I got a couple. I just watched. Have you seen the documentary on Billy Joel?
Oh, yeah, HBO? Yeah, absolutely.
It was, you know, it was a little before my time. I didn't really listen to Billy that much, besides like "We Didn't Start the Fire." Remember that song when I was a kid? Yeah. But watching that documentary, I've always had this theory that you could only make really good songs. You know, most artists really hit it big kind of when they're poor and hungry, like they just don't have much, and they're kind of relatable. Billy's ability to write these songs as he became the biggest artist in the world, yet they were still such a relatable, you know, verses and the way that he wrote. It's just, I didn't know that much about him. I was blown away. It was, I was captivated for basically 4 hours. It was excellent.
I love that. I love music documentaries, but I was never a Billy Joel guy, like ever. So I wasn't going to go, oh, I really need to know how this music was made. And I just, you're absolutely, I started watching, like, this is like nourishing me. This is like, I need to see this because the creativity part of it is fascinating to me. And music's the one where you always see it explained best because it's notes, it's an audience. Like there's a lot to it. That's not painting. That's not writing. And it really, really was done well. And I'll tell you, yeah, when you say, when you're young and you're poor, I also think you got to have angst and you got to have a little neurosis to create like that, I think. And I just think that you saw that Joel is a very confident dude, but he's got these things in his brain that make him doubt himself and make him double back. And that creates, I think, the kind of tension to get those songs out of him.
Yeah, and I guess what I was saying, like the hunger when you haven't made it, and even when a lot of these bands or individuals make it, they don't even feel comfortable in it, but they're just so hungry to get it. Now, it doesn't mean, obviously, you know, some of the greatest bands or singers like make hits once they become really famous. But this guy went on for like almost two decades just creating historic songs. And I would argue I didn't know this, but you know, I would say Piano Man, if you just said to someone casual, is probably his most famous song, but it wasn't a big hit. It didn't do much for him at the time. It became a bigger song as he's aged, but it was just really, really good. I thought it was just excellent. It was very well done. Cause I'm with you. I'm a good big music documentary guy. Also, like, he could only write by himself in a, you know, sometimes you see these guys, they like write as a group, or he also doesn't quite get the credit, but like Garth Brooks, I'm a big country music guy. Country music wasn't that big till the mid late 90s, starting with Garth Brooks, who became like Michael Jackson level famous because his big inspiration was Billy Joel, watching the way that he performed and how good he was. And they became good friends. And the other show, I think it's on HBO too, it's this new show called Task.
I've just
kind of this thrilling. It's kind of it's a lot. I mean, it's a heavy show, a lot going on, but it's one of your classic, like HBO, really well done. Sometimes you get spoiled in this day and age where it's like, you go to Netflix or Amazon Prime and all 8 episodes are out. It's kind of refreshing sometimes where once a week an episode is released. It's kind of a throwback to an era that I don't even know if that's going to exist in like 5 more years, where it's just, you don't give me all 8 episodes immediately. But HBO, I think Apple Plus or Apple TV or whatever it's called, does it as well sometimes, which sometimes you like. You're like, God, I would watch another episode, but I don't need to stay up.
Right, yeah, anticipation. And what's the next episode going to be like? All right, John, taking plenty of time. As always, really appreciate the conversation. It's really easy talking to you about football. Love to do it. Good luck, and thanks so much for doing this.
See you, Tim.
All right, guys. See you at the show for today, everybody.